Production. Recorded live.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
I must include this addenda, this small proviso. You shall wear your masks until midnight. If any one of you should take them off, from my estate you shall each receive train fare back to Boston. And that's it.
Well, we won't be spoil sports. If this is your pleasure, Father, we'll indulge you.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. It is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. I'm your host, Lynn. I'm here with my co-hosts, Robert, Bobby, and Dave. Hello, guys.
Howdy. Hey, yeah.
And Happy New Year to everyone, since this is our
first show.
Hang on
for a minute. I'm looking for my mask. Oh, sorry.
Okay. This is our first. And we're still crazy after all these shows. And this is our first show of the new year, so I do want to wish everyone a Happy New Year, and I hope it was good and fun for everybody. And today we are going to be talking about one of the better offerings of Season 5 called The Masks, and fan favorite of Season 5, at least. So I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
To Jason Foster, a tired ancient who on this particular Mardi Gras evening will leave the Earth. But before departing, he has some things to do, some services to perform, some debts to pay, and some justice to mete out. This is New Orleans Mardi Gras time. It is also the Twilight Zone.
Yes, it is also the Twilight Zone. And in The Masks, we have Jason Foster, and he's a very wealthy old man who's dying. And he's very cranky and he's very candid. And he's not thrilled about having a visit from his daughter Emily and her family. And of course he did invite them, but he's not thrilled about them being there. It's her and her husband, Wilfred, and her son, Wilfred Jr., and her daughter, Paula. But all four have various terrible little traits. Emily, she's a cowardly, self-centered hypochondriac. She whines and complains about everything. And her husband, Wilfred, he's a successful businessman, but he's introverted and greedy, and he thinks of everything in monetary terms. Paula, the daughter, she's extremely vain. She's constantly checking out her appearance in the mirror. As a matter of fact, she's looking at herself in the mirror. She's looking at one when she greets her grandfather. And Wilfred Jr., the son, he's an oaf. He's a sadistic bully. He enjoys causing pain and suffering to other people and to animals. And it's clear that they're only there in order to claim Jason's fortune once he dies. Of course, Jason, he is not shy about his opinions on his family, and he openly insults every one of them. So in an act of apology, as apologetic as he can be, he says he has a special Mardi Gras party planned for them that night. So after dinner, the family gathers in his study, and he offers them special one-of-a-kind masks. These masks, he says, are crafted by an old Cajun, and they are really ugly creations, but he says they have special properties as well. So he informs them that a Mardi Gras custom is to wear the masks that are the exact opposite of a person's true personality. Thereupon, he says sarcastically that these masks are just the opposite of what they are, of who they are. And he gives a mask of a sniveling coward to his daughter, Emily. He gives one of a miserable miser to Wilfred, a twisted buffoon to Wilfred Jr., and a self-obsessed narcissist to Paula. And he himself wears a skull, claiming that it's the opposite of death, of life. The opposite of life is death, so he wears a skull. Now, the family, they don't want to wear the mask. But Jason quotes that his demands as a proviso from his will is that they must wear them, and all four of them are supposed to wear them and leave them on until midnight, or they will receive nothing from his estate other than train fare home to Boston. So, naturally, the four are disgusted, but they comply and they wear them. And the hours go by and the hours go by, and eventually all four of them beg to take the masks off. They say they are absolutely unbearable. They're so uncomfortable. And Jason, he ignores their pleas, and he delivers one final tirade to the entire family right before he dies. But then right before that, he explains that even without their masks, they are nothing but caricatures. And then he dies. The foursome then rejoices in the fact that they're now rich until they remove the masks and they find to their absolute horror that their faces have conformed to the hideous shapes of the masks. When Jason's mask is removed, it appears as if nothing's changed, but his face is actually the expression of death itself, calm, peaceful, and serene. And as the episode ends, the butler, Jeffrey, looks upon their ugly faces as they stand in the stairwell. Woo-hoo! Well, it is Mardi Gras, and Jason was prepared for it. Doctor informs him he doesn't have that long to live, and his cold-hearted family, they had come to pay their last respects so they can get what they can. You know, I mean, they have to pay the last respects. They figure that's the only way that they're going to get this inheritance is to act as though they actually give a crap about him. You know, and what I liked is that Jason basically told them how disgusting and ignorant they all were. He gives them those magical masks, and he knew what he was doing. You know, and he knew and that they were going to wear them because that was the only way to get the fortune, and they wore them until midnight. And he wears that mask of death, you know, but all the masks are ugly. But, you know, you do what you have to do. If you're going to get that much money, you do what you have to do. But they were obnoxious right till the very end. And I was so glad that Jason told them off one last time and told them what pieces of dirt they were before he took his last breath. You know, and they're like a wolf pack. Once he dies, they're like a wolf pack, you know, pulling off the mask. And, oh, yes, you know. He said, but they found out that they now look like masks, and, you know, justice was done. And I felt they got their just rewards, and I have a feeling that Jason was resting in peace. Now, of course, Jason could have really screwed them over by leaving his fortune to charity and leaving them with nothing. But that would have been well deserved. But this is good, too, because all the money in the world is not going to do them any good if nobody can stand to look at them. Ida Lupino. The actress, Ida Lupino, she directed this episode, and she also starred in season one's The 6mm Shrine, and she also had many other directing credits. 9 episodes of Boris Karloff's Thriller, 3 episodes of The Fugitive, and 2 episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. So I thought this was a great episode with great ending, and I think it's the last classic episode of the series, and I rate it a 5. And
but it's so sad how it's butchered when it's re-showed, though.
I know, it's a shame. It's really a shame when they do it on sci-fi, but at least, you know, if I have the DVDs or Hulu or something like that, you can see it in its entirety. Okay, Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Of course, in my review, I give the saying from Star Trek II to Wrath of Khan, where Khan says that revenge is a dish best served cold. It's very cold in space. And that's what Jason had in mind for his daughter and his relatives, and to show their true selves before he died. And, I mean, masks that we see in different shows, you know, physical masks or not so physical as well. I mean, superheroes wear masks, villains wear masks. There's a series that me and my wife watch called Fargo. And one of the characters kind of wears a mask, but not literally, you know, metaphorically he wears a mask. And there's a scene where he sees a wolf, which I guess represents the villain of the series there. So it's very interesting, this episode, The Mask, because it was great getting introduced to the Mardi Gras. When I watched this, very much reminded me of the James Bond Live and Let Die one with Roger Moore, where that one also, Bond is there at New Orleans during Mardi Gras. And to you guys there, Dave and Rick Wall, remember the first story of Peter Capaldi in Doctor Who, which is Deep Breath, the scene where in a restaurant the booth goes down, very much remind me of the James Bond one. I'm surprised it wasn't mentioned in hardly any of the shows I listened to that reviewed it, but...
I think I mentioned something about it in Tultum.
Oh, you did? Okay, I wasn't sure if anybody mentioned it or not. I listened to a lot of the different shows, so, you know, I could have missed that. And if you did, great. I'm glad you remembered it. Unfortunately, I couldn't give this a classic. I said it kind of missed the mark as a classic. It had too much talking, very little action in it. I wish there would have been more of the Mardi Gras atmosphere. I wish we would have seen some of it outside.
I agree with that. I mean, I would have liked to have seen a little something of the celebration. Didn't they
weren't
going to
pay for that, not at this point.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the budget was so low. But didn't they show one quick scene? Like a 2 or 3 second scene of the Mardi Gras outside? Or did
Might
they
have,
not?
Probably.
Just through the window, yeah.
Yeah, one real quick scene, yeah.
Yeah, it was sad. It would have been nice to, you know, got a little bit more than that. But, like you said, budget, unfortunately. I mean, it would have been spectacular. And I think it would have probably... The whole point that really got to me was just the whole redemption situation. There was none. I mean, you know, you would... At least the daughter or one of the relatives, some regret, you know... tenderness, forgiving, something like that. And you know, the old Scrooge one with George C. Scott. How about a little bit of tenderness? A little bit of, you know, sad.
Yeah.
But in the end, all you get is a bitter man and unforgiving relatives. And they get, you know, the just deserved, you know, labor pretty much, which pretty much was just feeding off the old man the whole time they've been alive. So the cursed mask wins out for this episode. And so, you know, in the end, maybe the relatives got what they deserve. Jason rested easy, knowing the world. We'll see his kids for what they are, snubbering, whiny, ugly, rich people.
Yeah. And the money will do nothing for them now.
Yeah. But, you know, they inherit everything, but as Rod says at the end, they have to do it behind the shadows.
They'll have to spend it all on plastic surgery now.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I don't think that would even
choice.
Help.
That might not. Are you still getting background noise from my mic?
Just a little.
Okay, because I saw you typing it there, and I was moving it around trying to get it better, but my mic, I think, is wearing out. Sorry about that.
Okay. I just want to let you know what was going on.
No, I'm
there.
Glad you tell me. I need to get a new set of headphones.
Well, but, you know, the death mask that Jason wore was symbolic of what death is, a peaceful transaction to the afterlife, whatever it may be. But I give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay.
So it's still close to classic for me on this. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how order we got set up, so I'll let you name the next person there, Lynn.
Okay, I'll give it to Bobby.
You sure you want to hear this?
Oh, sure.
Maybe Rick should visit the bathroom while I'm speaking. I don't think he's going to like this.
All right, I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, bye. Yes, indeed. Just what the doctor ordered coming right after that ugly, dark, depressing drivel, What's in the Box, with characters so hideous you wanted to jump out the window with them. Here comes another dark, depressing monstrosity, with more characters even uglier, both inside and eventually out. Nice job, Rod. Don't give me anything or anyone to like or pull for, heaven forbid. After all, it is season 5. Back when I did my written review, I managed to find one person at IMDb who didn't have an orgasm while watching this, and I decided to plagiarize a couple sentences from him. He wrote, "This is unfortunately the sickest episode of The Twilight Zone. A man is dying. His last wish is an evil obsession to play God with the lives of 4 people. It's a story for control freaks about the ultimate control freak and those he judges." That's the end of his review. Now let me continue with mine. All I can say about his comments are amen to that. Instead of leaving this life by donating his fortune to charity or putting it in a trust fund where he could do some good, he leaves it to people he despises and then makes them pay for it. It's a little like donating your money to mass murderers on death row and then standing there and laughing while they are executed in the electric chair before they can spend it. Ha, ha, ha. A nutty story from start to finish. Who ever heard of people in line for an inheritance going over to the soon-to-be-departed's home and getting reamed out and then being told to put on masks or else? Then standing there and watching him expire. How about letting him die first and then having his lawyer read you his last will and testament? Oh no, he has to get the last laugh before that can happen. Besides, don't wills usually start out with the words, "being of sound mind and body"? This psycho hardly fits that profile. So they are now as ugly on the inside, ugly on the outside, as they were on the inside. Big deal. They need to go over to the hospital where Janet Tyler just had her bandages removed to find out what ugly really is. Like her, they'll feel a lot better at the end. In my written review, I gave it a 2.5, but after suffering through it again yesterday, I realized that I forgot to put a minus sign in front of the 2. Nevertheless, I'll keep it a 2.5. Call it temporary insanity, like the nutty, vindictive old fart in this episode. Thank goodness this is over, but after giving this nasty review, my face feels kind of funny, and now I'm afraid to look in the mirror. Lynn?
Okay. Good, Robert. That was a good one. Okay, so just leaving it at 2.5.
Yeah.
All right. Dave?
Okay, well, yeah, Series 5, Episode 145, aired 20th of March, 1964. Yes, you're quite right, there should be somebody at least to root for there, and there wasn't. I mean, he could have left the money to the butler, couldn't he? He seemed to be the only gentleman in the room. By the way, the actor, Bill Walker, played the butler, seemed to get the last laugh anyway, because he, as an actor, lived till he was 96. Robert Keith, who was playing Jason Foster, who was actually, I think, 66. And I think he's only supposed to be playing somebody who's about 68. So, dear me, it's a bit near the bone. I was thinking he should be nearer to 90 or something. But there you go.
He's actor Brian Keith's father.
Right. Ah, I didn't know that. Well done for that. Thank you.
Yeah,
but he died, actually, at age 68, and he's 66 here in this one. And of course, this is, I think, the only Twilight Zone episode directed by a woman, Ida Lupino, isn't it? And she's the only person who's actually directed and also starred in an episode of Twilight Zone. She was in the 16mm Shrine from Series 1, Episode 4. But that's just some background information. Yeah, they were an unlikely bunch. I thought it was well constructed, very mean-hearted, as Robert said. It wasn't really about redemption. It was about comeuppance, really. But I thought that he overplayed his hand somewhat when he's giving out the mass. Each of the others, the three others, except for the young sadistic boy, were vain enough not to see the illusion that he was saying, and you're nothing like this, of course, you're nothing like that. And they you can actually believe them, you know, not smelling a rat, as it were, and going along and thinking, well, yes, he's quite right, I am very affable and this, that and the other, like his son says.
Tell me, have you examined your masks?
Our masks?
They're unique, Father.
They are very unique. You know, they are made by an old Cajun. Made is inaccurate. They're created. I'm told that in addition to their artistic value, they have certain properties. They're worn only during the Mardi Gras, and there's a ritual to the wearing. One tries to select a mask that is the antithesis of what the wearer is.
Oh, sure. Well, that's very interesting. Very interesting.
Yes, it is. Now, shall we select our masks? Tell me, Wilfred, how do you fancy yourself?
Well, I don't understand, Father.
Oh, come now, be candid. When you shave in the morning, what looks back at you from the mirror?
Oh, really, Father, I think we're a little old for power games.
Let me be the judge of that. Now, I want an honest self-assessment.
You're serious, aren't you?
I was never more serious.
Well, I'm an affable man. I've always been an affable man.
Oh, you're an affable man. Well, then, you're friendly, you're outgoing, you're extrovertish.
I think so.
Yes, then, along with this affability, you have a certain rapport with your fellow man.
Yes, indeed.
Now, the opposite of all this amiability would be this face here. Look at it.
Charming.
Wear it. Live with it a while, Wilfred. It has great subtlety, Wilfred. There's greed, avarice, cruelty. All of the character traits that you don't have. And my dear, brave Emily.
I'm really not up to this, Father.
Of course you are, my dear. You're up to anything. Your courage dictates this brief period of sacrifice. Now, look at this face, my dear. The face of a self-centered coward, a gutless flab. In contrast to your intrepid valor. Here, Emily. And the one who walks in beauty like the night.
Frankly, Grandfather, I think this whole thing is a bore.
Oh, but Paula, look at that beauty. That insolent hauteur. That skin-deep vanity. It has none of your heart, none of your selflessness. Wear it, Paula, just for a few hours. And the timid, gentle Wilfred Jr. over there.
Oh, come on, Grandfather.
This would be your mask, Wilfred, my boy. It's a face of a dull, stupid clown. In contrast to your gentle refinement, your courteous civility. Here.
What about your mask, Father?
This is mine. the face of death, because I'm alive, understand? I shall wear the thing that stalks me at this moment.
Father, you don't mean we have to wear these ugly things?
Only for a few hours. Only till the unmasking at midnight.
Well, I won't wear mine.
Me neither. It's stupid.
Well, Father, it seems that we're somewhat at odds here.
Not really, Wilfred. You all came here for one purpose. To watch me go and cry bon voyage. To put coins on my closed eyes and with your free hands start grabbing things from my shelves.
Father, that's cruel.
That's truth. You came to reap everything I've sown, to collect everything I've built. Well, I shall not disappoint you. Everything is yours. Everything is prepared, the will is made, the four of you inherit everything I own. Everything. Money, house, property holdings, stocks, bonds, everything.
Father, you're breaking our hearts.
Oh, that's the most touching thing you ever dredged up by way of conversation, Wilfred.
But when the three of the older ones hear the youngest guy sounded as described as having no malice, this, that, and the other, that should have set alarm bells going, because they all knew that, as Lynn said, he was a bit of a buffoon, a bit of an idiot. Obviously, he's the black sheep of the family in terms of getting the family a bad reputation and doing, you know, having to be bailed out from the law, no doubt, a few times. So one would have thought at least somebody's suspicions would have been aroused at that one. The idea that he could have got his own back by giving the money away, I'm not too sure about that. I suppose if he, let's put it this way, if he'd have given the money away after he'd put them, you know, if he'd put the masks on them and then he said just before he died, oh, by the way, I lied about the money, I've already given it away. And then they would reveal that they had their faces, you know, changed by the masks. Then indeed they could have said, hang on a minute, we've got proof that he was mad, look what he's done to our faces, so we can get the money back from the charities. So, you know, he could only play one hand, as it were. He couldn't get them twice. But it was a malicious thing. And therefore you come back to, you know, what's the old adage? The acorn doesn't fall far from the tree. It may well be that they got all these mean streaked things from he himself. He wasn't exactly a pleasant person. Even he had a little bit of banter with his doctor, who, although he seemed about the same age, had obviously doctored him from a very young age. So, basically, although he got the last laugh in one sense, you can argue that it was his seed that was doing all these things. What else? I think that's pretty much it. Although there were some good character actors there, the son Alfred Harper character played by Milton Seltzer, he went on to play an awful lot more, and also of course he was in another Twilight Zone episode, Hocus Pocus and Frisbee. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I think it was a strong one. I think Bobby's right though. If there'd have been some alleviating circumstances, maybe if there'd have been, you know, think of the Adams family, where there's, you know, if there'd been one of them that really shouldn't have been jumped in, shouldn't have been categorised by the ones. It was maybe if they'd done a switch, maybe if one of the children had actually been a delight, you know, they would have put a horrible, let me get this right way around. If one of them had been completely innocent, maybe they could have had, he could have put a mask on them and then be the only one to come out unscathed. So that would have given, you know, that it was due just deserts to some, but the ones that actually, maybe one of them showed some sympathy towards him, brought the grandfather some tea or something. So I think it lacked that just final element that would have elevated it to the higher status that Robert think that it fell short of. So
that's,
I think 4 out of 5.
Well,
I just think they should have, one of them should have at least just got fed up and tired and took the mask off, and then that person would become the middleman for the other three, because want to show their faces, so they would do their dealings with that one person, even though they would get the train fare back to Boston. You know, something out of that.
But I'm thinking, like, in the Addams Family, is it the Herman Monster? I get the two mixed up, where there's one who's really angelic, and they think she's the black sheep of the family because she's an angelic angel of a girl. So maybe the black sheep of this family could have been the one that actually showed the grandfather or father, or maybe even their great-granddaughter or something. And they
Aren't
the
you
one
thinking of
escaped.
Marilyn from the Munsters?
But, yeah, probably. Yeah, I do get them all mixed up.
Yeah,
but what I mean is, it would have been nice if one of them had escaped this fairly sadistic revenge, after all. But yeah, definitely a strong episode, and it was good to have it in what I believe, although I wasn't here for some of the recent ones, a little bit of a dearth of good episodes to be had.
What's your rating?
Back to you, Lynn. Four out of five, I think. Yeah.
Does anybody remember Rowan and Martin's Laughing?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Alan Seuss of Wilford Jr. He was the one, Alan Seuss from Rowan and Martin's Laughing.
Suck it to me.
suck it to me, you sweet bippy. Okay, Rick, on to you.
Okay, Bobby, you think that he was nuts for telling them to come to his house and watch him die and wear masks. Is that any stranger than having people come, making people come to a will reading and having to stay over a house, say, for a day? And if they stay in the house, they get the money. If not, they lose it. It's happened. Or how about something called a tontine, where you leave it to the last surviving relative or friend or whatever.
What is that called?
A tontine.
I've never heard of that.
Let's see.
Eddie Rickenbacker, if you remember Rick Wall, had a group of people together, and they have this at the Air Force Museum, where they had glasses made for who this team he got together, and then they had a bottle of wine or whatever, and the last surviving pilot or whoever.
Oh, it's the wine.
That group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay, now
that's a tontine. Yeah.
Yeah, MASH had an episode like that where Colonel Potter was the last survivor of his group and opened the wine with the MASH people. Okay. Okay, go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry.
Now I totally lost my train. Okay.
sorry about
anywho,
that.
Anywho, again, what did Rod want Twilight Zone to be? Morality plays. This is one big morality play. Was the metaphor a little thick? Yeah. And actually, it wasn't really metaphor, because it actually turned out to be physical things. And I'm wondering if they really were physical affectations, or if they were just the way they saw themselves after taking the masks off. I thought it was good. I liked it. Was it talky? Yeah. But have there been talky ones? Yeah. Have they been good? Yeah, some of them. I'd give it a 4.5.
Okay, yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I mean, there have been some in the past that were very talky and were still good. I mean, that episode from season 4, the hour-long one called He's Alive, about Hitler. There's a lot of talk. But, you know, it was a fairly decent episode with Dennis Hopper. It was mostly talk and very little action, but, you know, it was good. Yeah,
and
okay.
A little aside.
Mm-hmm.
When my mom died, and I think I've said this before, when my mom died, my sister and her family, and my brother and his family came and took some stuff that was supposedly in the will or what they thought my mother was going to give them. They were like vultures.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, absolute vultures. They ripped the house apart. I was sitting in the TV room, and my nephew comes in and goes, "Rick, do you want me to kick everybody out?" And I looked up at him, and at this point, I believe I've told you guys the trouble I had with my sister. You know, my brother and I have with my sister.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into that. But at this point, I was trying to keep what little family we had left. You know, I feel I never had really had a family, but again, you know, trying to be the peacemaker, the youngest one, you know, trying to, you know, mom died, dad's alive, let's be a family for once. I looked up at him and I said, "No, that's all right.
Let them do what they want." Yeah.
And in hindsight being 2020, I should have said, "Yeah, get them." And that includes you too, Scott. But no, stupid me wanted to look like the good brother.
Yeah, I've heard of families doing that, you know, finding out that somebody died and just ransacking the house. It's like, "Oh, they're gone? Okay, what's mine? What can I take?"
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty pitiful, but it happens. All right, well, okay, so we have a 4. And we have a 4.5 and two fours, right, Dave? A 4.
Yep,
that's right. 2 fours.
Okay, 2 fours, a 4.5, a 5, and a 2.5. Okay, so that's all right.
A and Felix gave it a 5, but really.
Felix, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, Felix gave it a 5, and would have liked to have given it higher. Okay, that's cool, Felix. Okay, well, as I said, I think it was the last decent episode of season 5. And it is the last decent episode of season 5. We have a few more left, which are not fabulous.
We've got a classic left, Lynn.
What's that?
Stopover in a Quiet Town.
Oh, yeah. We do have one more decent one left, Stopover in a Quiet Town. But after that, there are no more decent ones left. And our next show is going to be on January 31st. And we're going to be...
I Am the Night, Call
I
Me Black.
Right, and Sounds
and
Silences.
And the classic Sounds and Silences, which everybody gave a 0 to.
Yeah. Sounds and Silences, and I Am the Night, Call Me Black, and that'll be on Saturday, January 31st at 5 p.m. So that'll do it for this.
Well, when you have the bard to rate the worst
episodes
you can using that scale.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Well, we're gonna do a best of worst of show at the end of this series.
Yeah.
Barb will be right at the worst end possibly.
Absolutely.
Actually, be number one of the worst. I would.
Well, don't give it away yet. We'll do it on April 18th.
We'll do a best of worst. That'll be our last episode. Snip, snip, stop, stop. But.
You know, I wanted to tell you guys, I'm surprised the one that we're reviewing now, we got like, on our written reviews, we got what, 4 more to go, that people graded it higher than we did. And talk about being cynical about what we reviewed. Wow.
Oh, okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, people give it higher ratings than what really we did. So.
Wow.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Okay, guys, well, I will see everybody hopefully 2 weeks from now on January 31st and hope the weather gets a little bit nicer. It's been brutally cold, so kind of hoping things get nicer today was decent. But here's hoping for good weather and hoping to see all of you in 2 weeks. Thanks for being here, guys. Thank you, Felix.
Bye.
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 Bye, everybody. See you next time.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next time out in the Twilight Zone, we do a probe in depth into a current cancer known as hatred. And we tell you the story of a little Midwestern village which wakes up in a violent morning to discover that there is no morning, no light, no sun, only a frightening and pervading darkness. It stars Michael Constantine and Paul Fix, and it's called I Am the Night, Color Me Black. Next time out, we bring you a few decibels of sound in a bizarre opus about a man who breaks eardrums for a living. We welcome to the program two fine talents, Mr. John MacGyver and Miss Penny Singleton, who will prove the following point, namely that too much of a good thing can have nightmarish results, and that all things are not necessarily as they meet the eye or the ear. On the Twilight Zone next, Sounds and Silences.
Yes, sir, I'm Cuban Pete. I'm the crazy man, I can scream.